Humankind is produced in association with WGBH Boston and supported by the Humankind Program Fund. Additional funding for this series has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the National Institutes of Health, the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and the Park Foundation.
The climate change, global warming problem is a moral, spiritual issue, and probably the most important one of today. And I think that because I think how we respond is going to define what it means to be human today. What are we leaving for the generations that come after us? What kind of people are we?
Widely varying religious congregations respond to the specter of global climate change. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Mark Twain has often been quoted as saying everybody talks about the weather, but nobody does anything about it. Now a fascinating movement among religious congregations, liberal and conservative, is starting to talk a lot about the weather. They focus on the global warming that most scientists believe is precipitating violent storms, extremes of temperature, and other changes. And the congregations are coming together to do something about the causes of global warming. They call this movement Interfaith Power and Light, operating in more than 20 states. Recently, one of the leaders, Episcopal priest Sally Bingham of San Francisco, addressed a meeting in Utah of concerned clergy.
They gathered a group of people together and invited me to come down and meet with the Salt Lake City Interfaith Roundtable. And I found it to be one of the most exciting and inspiring experiences that I've had in the whole years that we've been doing this. There were Muslims, Jews, Baha'is, Christian Scientists, Protestants, Catholics, and Mormons all in the room together, all in agreement that we had to do something about the global warming situation, and they wanted to start an Interfaith Power and Light program in Utah. Not only was it bringing all these different religions together in agreeing on something, but it was also going to start a program there that would help to save creation.
Adding to the unlikely mix of faith groups concerned about climate change is the religious right. Richard Cizik, vice president of the National Association of Evangelicals, recently spoke at Gordon College in Wenham, Massachusetts.
We are talking about issues that imperil the very planet that we live on, that are irreversible, that are cosmological, that are transcendent, that rival anything any of your forefathers, your evangelical forefathers, ever had to address. And these issues, these changes that are occurring and transforming our world, if allowed to continue, are irreversible.
The problem of climate change not only unites more and more religionists, it also puts them on the same page with scientists. More than 2,000 experts on the UN-sponsored Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change recently concluded that the evidence for global warming is unequivocal. Temperatures are increasing in the air and the oceans, ice formations are melting, sea levels are rising. And the changes are related to extreme weather, from heat waves to lashing storms. These trends have long concerned Steve McCausland, a founder of Interfaith Power and Light, living near Boston.
I grew up in St. Paul's Church in Dedham, Massachusetts, singing in the choir. And the good thing about singing in the choir was that you didn't have to go to Sunday school. Another good thing, as I learned later, was that you sit in church and you listen to the lessons and you listen to the sermons, and I heard over and over again that there is a commandment that we love our neighbors. And I heard over and over again the story of the Good Samaritan and the parable of the servants and their talents. And these stories eventually sank in, and they stuck with me, and they have really been guiding principles to my life. I had a father who enjoyed the wilderness, particularly canoeing, and so I spent several summers canoeing around lakes in New Hampshire, and eventually summers paddling the rivers and lakes of Ontario and Quebec. And so from the very beginning, I've had a lot of exposure both to Christianity and to the environment, and they eventually became one in this ministry. I find the same peace in nature, the same beauty, the same music, really, even, that I find in church.
The choir at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. Reverend Sally Bingham serves there under the unusual title of Environmental Minister. She's a longtime colleague of Steve McCausland.
He and I were hiking in Estes Park, Colorado, almost 10 years ago, and decided that global warming was the most serious issue in the environmental community, and as it turns out now, 10 years later, it's probably the most serious issue on the planet today that's facing our generation, and what we do is going to affect the future in a very dramatic way. But we decided that we would use the deregulation of the electrical industry to focus and allow for people to start thinking about where does their electricity come from. And we are both Episcopalians, so we came up with Episcopal Power and Light. And while it sounded like a utility, and some people in the beginning thought that we were selling electricity, what we were really doing was promoting clean, renewable energy and helping people understand that they could, both in Massachusetts and in California, purchase their electricity from a clean power source. So Episcopal Power and Light is really where it began. And then over a period of about 3 years, it turned into Interfaith Power and Light. And it still brings a smile to people's faces.
A special welcome to you all here at St. Stephen Lutheran Church. My name is Scott Howard. I'm the pastor here. And we are happy to have you here as our guests this afternoon for our viewing of An Inconvenient Truth about the crisis of global warming, which is affecting our church. And we hope that this movie will be challenging and inspiring to you. And we do have several guests here today that might be able to help us.
St. Stephen, a Lutheran church in Marlborough, Massachusetts, is one of more than 4,000 congregations nationwide that have screened the Al Gore documentary under a special arrangement with Paramount Pictures. The film explains how we massively contribute to global warming through the byproducts of burning oil, coal, and natural gas, fuels we heavily rely on for transportation, heat, and electricity. After watching the film, members of the church gathered for refreshments.
We're put here for the purposes of taking care of a creation, and with that comes a tremendous amount of responsibility. And I think it's that responsibility that motivates congregations coming together to view this film, and again to make that decision that something needs to be done, that we need to step up and really make a difference.
What practical effect does that have for us?
Simple decisions like not leaving televisions turned on, not letting vehicles idle when they don't need to be on.
I'm going to be living nearby in co-housing community that's being built, and one of the things that many co-housing communities focus on in terms of how they build their homes is to do things like make them convertible for active or passive solar energy, to reduce car travel by encouraging people to carpool, or just by living close to lots of people so you can socialize just a short walk down the path with your neighbors and friends rather than having to drive long distances.
Steve McCausland of Interfaith Power and Light.
I haven't been counting, but I think I've probably been in about 60 or 70 churches in the last couple of months.
And when you go into those churches, what are you hearing about why people are now galvanized by this issue?
I think a lot of people are still stunned by the implications of what climate change can mean to them and to their lives, and it's highly unusual for us in the United States to find out that the problem's not over there, but it's right here. And we know that the problem is not just in the big businesses like the Exxons and the Mobils and the Detroit automakers and so forth, but it is in the way we as individuals, families, communities live our lives. And so the changes that we are going to have to make are going to have to be very deep, and it's going to require something a little bit more than just casual attention to the way we live. And I think that the community of faith has been paying attention to lifestyle, how we live. How do we love our neighbor?
If you love your neighbor, you wouldn't pollute your neighbor's air, nor would you pollute your neighbor's water or do anything that would harm your neighbor.
Reverend Sally Bingham.
And once you begin to understand this problem of the climate changing and global warming, you realize that it's the poor people in poor nations that are going to have the disproportionate and worst effects happening to them, and they'll also happen sooner than they happen in the industrialized countries. And every major tradition, not only does it call for good stewardship of creation, but it calls for service to the poor. And if we pay attention to the fact that it's the poor people that will suffer the most when the storms are more severe, when the seas rise, when crops are disrupted, when disease comes from mosquitoes that haven't died in the winter because it didn't get cold enough. And these are the kinds of things that not only are they destroying creation, they're hurting poor communities. And we have a responsibility as people of faith to protect creation and to care for the poor.
Obviously, an environmental effect will have an impact upon the entire population. Why do you think people who are poor will disproportionately feel the sting of that?
Well, it's the poor nations in the underdeveloped countries or in the developing countries where they see the quickest and most devastating effects of the rising seas. There's a little island out in the South Pacific called Tuvalu, and it is going underwater. Its population has asked for refuge and a place to live in Australia. And in Bangladesh, as the seas rise, it's the people that live on the coast in the poor fishing communities that will be affected. If you take seriously the scientific evidence that the storms are more severe now, and then you look at what happened in New Orleans, we saw all over the television sets what was happening to the poor communities in New Orleans. Now, those wealthier people, some of them have second homes, some of them could get into their big cars and drive out of town, but the poor communities had no place to go and no way to be saved from these devastating storms.
You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. For more information on this segment, Green Congregations, check our website, humanmedia.org.
Do you think some of the radical weather events in the last few years, hurricanes and tsunamis, have heightened people's awareness?
I think that people are very capable of connecting dots.
Steve McCausland.
And even though we may not want to tie our behavior, our need to, you know, drive great big fancy comfortable cars and so forth, could possibly have an effect on the weather, and particularly cause something as devastating as Hurricane Katrina. But there's have been so many scientists talking about this for so long that eventually the information gets out and people begin to connect the dots on their own.
Interfaith Power and Light believes individuals, through their personal consumption of energy, directly contribute to the problem of global warming. Our use of fossil-based fuels like oil, coal, and gas produce a greenhouse effect, trapping heat in the atmosphere. For Reverend Sally Bingham, a starting point toward a solution is conservation at participating faith communities.
We focus primarily on the facility itself because we feel that once a religious leader can announce to the congregation that they are cutting greenhouse gases by putting in compact fluorescent light bulbs, or they have a new refrigerator, or they've put in thermal screens on their windows, they've gotten a new boiler, and not only are they saving creation and preventing carbon dioxide from going into the atmosphere, but they're saving a considerable amount of money. And I don't know any congregation that doesn't want to save money. So when the religious leader can announce to the congregation that they're saving on their energy bill by doing this, this, and this, we hope that that message will translate into people doing it in their own homes.
It kind of sets an example and legitimizes those personal changes.
It's another way for congregations to serve as an example for the community. And it really is wonderful when a congregation will raise the money and put solar on their roof. And that serves as a beacon of light, if you will, to the community.
And also a very visible symbol.
That's right.
By any reckoning, the effort to reduce global warming's impact on our planet is uphill. Climate scientists call for an 80% reduction in greenhouse emissions. Steve McCausland.
What that means is that 100% of us need to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 80%. Or 80% of us need to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 100%. And those are tall orders. It means that everybody must participate. And that is going to be the big challenge. There will always be people who will get out there and show the way and do it themselves first. Not necessarily because they want to be leaders, but they want to do the right thing. And in doing the right thing, they become leaders and they become powers of example. And people can say, well, if he or she can do it, then perhaps I can. And I'm what I consider to be a very sort of normal run-of-the-mill person. And I am doing the best I can in my life to reduce my carbon footprint, to reduce my consumption of fossil fuels, to reduce my emissions of greenhouse gases.
What are some specific changes you've made?
I bought myself a hybrid car, the Honda Insight, back in the year 2000. And I had been driving what I called my hypocrite mobile for a number of years before then. So I went from about 12 to an average of 65 miles a gallon. I have saved more than the cost of the car over what I used to drive at $2 a gallon. At $3 a gallon, I have saved enough to afford to put photovoltaic solar panels on my roof. Working together, we can save energy and save money. And begin to save the planet. Not a bad idea. When, however, you are cutting down on your use of energy, you save a lot of other things too. Protect the peace, Where there is oil, there is blood. Protect human health. Where there is oil or internal combustion engines in the city, for example, you have human health issues. And eventually we have a huge opportunity to create jobs. This is and should be and will be, I have faith, a new industrial revolution. And lots of new jobs will be created. And we, as members of the community of faith, acting together, we'll begin to have enough say in the marketplace that we'll have some influence as to where the jobs go and who gets them. That's justice.
What's fascinating about this movement is how a subject that occupies climate scientists, energy executives, environmental activists, and some politicians has seeped into the life of religious congregations. Faith leaders increasingly see the dangers of climate change as a challenge not just to our physical environment, but also to the human spirit. Sally Bingham of Grace Cathedral in San Francisco.
Throughout Scripture, not only are humans called to be, to treat each other with dignity, to serve one another, but to also look after what God gave us to sustain ourselves. And we were given what I like to call free ecosystem services. I mean, God was looking after us with our clean water, clean air, rivers and streams, and all of these interconnected systems that work to keep not only keeping the ecosystem itself healthy, but to keep human beings healthy. And the minute we start upsetting those systems, it's like a domino effect. I mean, if we dam a river, it has effect on whatever is below the dam. And that seems to me true of everything. When you start upsetting those ecosystems, which we were given, we are causing enormous and, in some cases, damage that we don't even know we're causing until it's too late.
So why do you think we have taken this path that seems so fraught with peril both in the present and the near future?
In America, people seem to have accepted the notion that one's self-worth is wrapped up in how much they own or how many things they have, and rather than have a big heart and a big spirit and a kind and compassionate mind, we seem to feel that we're not important unless we have a great big house and a great big car, and that somehow our self-worth is wrapped up in things rather than behavior. And I think it's a notion that has gotten out of hand. And I think that where religion can play an important role in changing this is that as soon as we can make, back to this word stewardship, as soon as we can make the connection that people's behavior, every single one of your behaviors, of my behaviors, affects another person now. There's so many of us on the planet. Everything that we do, whether it's the coffee we drink, the clothes we wear, the cars we drive, the electricity we use, it all affects another person. And if the religious community can emphasize from the pulpit in all different denominations that your behavior counts, you matter to your neighbors, you matter to God, and your behaviors matter. And it's a matter of raising consciousness.
So many people whom I know really would rather not believe in some of the doomsday forecasting of some of the climate scientists.
Steve McCausland.
But climate scientists for a number of years have been talking about bigger and more ferocious and more frequent hurricanes, storms, typhoons, depending on what part of the world you're in. It is all coming to be, as the climatologists and their computer models have suggested that they probably would. The writing on the wall, the prophets have spoken, and it is all coming to be, and and folk of faith are beginning to wonder, what it is that we can do.
Are you a doomsayer?
Yeah, I understand that that many of the predictions are dire, and if one is prone to throwing up one's hands and saying, there's nothing we can do, let's just learn how to adapt, that's an option. That's the way a lot of people would probably go, will probably go. But I have children, and I would like very much for my children to be able to grow up and have their children grow up and experience some of the beauty of the planet that existed when I was their age. And I think it is for them that that I am doing all that I can, pulling out the stops to slow down climate change, hopefully eventually to stop it and then turn it back the other way. I mean, we've got a long way to go. There are some serious, potentially catastrophic changes in the works, and we're going to have to deal with them. But we can do better, and we must do better, and we must demonstrate that that we love our neighbors. We love our neighbors across town, around the world, and our intergenerational neighbors, our children. It's for them that that we need to do the best we can on this.
I try not to focus on the downside, but to focus on the fact that I have personal responsibility for my behavior and to answer to God's call to be a good steward of creation and to serve the poor. So I'm going to be focusing my behavior and my life on what I can do to alleviate this problem. And I like to feel that we can do this, that when people learned that when enough people learned that smoking could kill you or give you cancer, we changed. People stopped smoking. And I believe that at this point, the message about global warming has reached enough people that we are going to make the changes we need to make.
Reverend Sally Bingham of the Interfaith Power and Light Campaign, organized by the Regeneration Project in San Francisco. Listening to Humankind, I'm David Freudberg. Studio recording by Steve Colby. Editorial assistance from Thomas Royal. Special thanks to KQED San Francisco. Our program is presented by Human Media in association with The Network Incorporated. Program development and support provided by Short Media. This segment, Green Congregations, is Humankind program number 113. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a review at Apple Podcasts or another podcast service. It goes a long way in helping people find the Humankind series. And you can follow us on Instagram or Facebook, or check out our YouTube channel for full episodes of the podcast. Again, the title is Humankind on Public Radio. Finally, if you'd like to support this podcast, please go to humankindpodcast.org and choose how you can help at the top of our homepage. That's humankindpodcast.org. Thanks.